Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 785. I would like to plug a couple things on the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Our buddy Paul Scheer has a thing going with The Lonely Island. They're producing a new sketch show called Party Over Here. It stars Nicole Byer, Jessica McKenna, Allison Rich. The tapings will be in Los Angeles. They are free for people to attend. Whoa. They start Friday, February 5th. Info and tickets can be found at tiny.cc/partyoverhere. tiny.cc/partyoverhere. And also Friday, February 5th, which is the day this is going up. So hopefully you're in Los Angeles and you listen to this in a timely manner. Meltdown, where the Nerdist showroom is, has the Peanuts-themed art show. The Peanut Gallery is a celebration of Charles Schulz's iconic Peanuts comics. Over 100 artists will be sharing their love for Charlie Brown. Opening reception will be Friday, February 5th at 8 p.m. at Nerd Melt Gallery and Meltdown
just Charles.
Comics.
You got your Lucy, you got your Linus in there.
Hopefully Woodstock. There's a pig pen or two thrown in there. Maybe some...
What a treat.
Maybe you can see the lines of wah, 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 wah. No adults, though. Someone would have had to have done that,
sure.
I would imagine.
Support local artists.
I'm sure someone must have done... I guess we're going to go and see, like, what... Just we could guess what the mashups are going to be. You know, it's like, is there a Mario Peanuts mashup? Is there a Walking Dead Peanuts mashup?
Maybe there's a Charlie Brown, Charlie Murphy.
Maybe there's a Charlie... There may not be a Charlie Brown, Charlie Murphy mashup.
Go to find out.
I'm not 100% sure how long the work is going to be up, but it should be up for a little while. But just go to Meltdown Comics website and look it out, or go to nerdmeltla.com. That should give you the info as well. This episode is Josh Brolin, who was a goddamn delight. Oh my god,
new best friend.
Matt, I'm telling you, Matt and Brolin, like, they bonded, like, the bromance brewing between these two was
palpable. I mean, look for the new
podcast, palpable.
Brolin Out, with Josh and Matt. probably going to have to happen now.
Hall and Broats.
Ooh, huh? That's not bad.
Too close to Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah, I
think. Anyway.
Not too close to Hall and Oates. You idiot.
Well,
too close to Garfunkel and Oates.
Includes too close to Simon and Garfunkel now we're at it. Yes, yes, yes. But I don't know. I hope Roland and Myra start a podcast. There's an extra special thing that kind of happened. I don't know if I don't think we tagged this on to the end. I'll kind of spoil the story a little bit, but they had the wardrobe for Josh's movie Labor Day at the Arclight Theater on display, which is a movie that you don't really need to have the wardrobe on display for.
It was like a convenience store outfit. That was what was in a glass case.
So Josh brought it up and he talked about the movie, and Matt goes, "Oh, I took a picture of the wardrobe," and he's like, "Really?" And at the end of the podcast, Matt pulls up his Instagram feed and there's the picture of the Labor Day wardrobe.
It's me and Craig Rowan standing happily next to this case with the Labor Day wardrobe, and the caption I wrote, this is now 2.5 years ago, the caption I wrote was, "Wow, Labor Day."
And Brolin loved it so much, he took a picture of Matt's phone with Matt in the back making the hee face. So we had a really great time. Hail Caesar is the movie that he's promoting. You should watch Josh Brolin in anything because he's a fucking fantastic actor. And it turns out now he's a good dude. That is in theaters Friday, February 5th today, so you can go see it right after you listen to this podcast.
Before you go to Meltdown for
the Charlie Brown Show to see the Charlie Murphy Charlie Brown. You're a good Charlie Murphy Charlie Brown.
Oh, I love it.
Here's the Nerdist Podcast number 785 with Josh Brolin. Katie. Roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
No real official start. Casual. You can swear up a storm if you feel like it. There's no content restrictions.
Cool.
And it's just a loose chat. Vinyl. The vinyl series. You know something about it.
I know a lot about it.
Well, do tell.
I don't know how much of this should be on the podcast.
Well, let's listen and then we'll decide.
Well, just Ray Romano told me a story. Name drop, number one. Number two. Andrew Dice Clay is in the show. First episode.
I gotta tell you a story about vinyl.
He's in the pilot and he had the scene where he gets, spoiler alert, Andrew Dice Clay's character gets shot and killed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So every time he was doing the scene, he had to improvise a bunch of lines about, don't fuck me, fuck you, I get fucked all the time. And then he threw in a line every time about, even my twin brother's fucking my wife. So that when he died, he could be brought back. So he did this take 12 times, and Scorsese finally goes, all right, Andrew, can we just try one without saying the brother line? And then they do that one take of that, and he goes, okay, we got it.
He tried.
We're not going to use it, but would you just do one without that? That's the big, that's always
you
the big trick.
Never fall for just one for us. Never fall for the, just
never.
Do this for
I
us.
Just got into, I got into an argument with somebody. We were in the woods of North Carolina, and the guy was like, we were just thinking about literally changing one thing that would change the entire ending. They're thinking about using it, but can you just you know I'm not going to do this to you. I was like, he goes, and then I said no, and he looked at me, he had the greatest puppy dog eyes, and he goes, don't you trust me?
Aww, and did you?
I was like, fuck no, dude.
Okay, good. That's smart. Yeah, that's very smart.
Trust anybody.
Because that's the one they're going to use. That is absolutely
you just proved it. Right. How many times has that story been told? And, you know,
it's amazing.
Never with Andrew Dice Clay, because Andrew Dice Clay, it's like every story with Andrew Dice Clay ends up bad. You know? Somebody loses something.
I just like that he's thinking, you know, they'll have to bring me back. I'll be so good in this.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of like con job things that some actors, you know what you got to do is do your coverage this way, and they'll always have to. Like, there's some people that
don't give it to them until they get in close.
Yeah, it's like,
you know,
they're trying to game the system. Game the system. I would never think that far. I would never think that far ahead.
Just amazing.
I think it's pretty ballsy, too. With Scorsese, you know, like having Scorsese there and being like, yeah, I'm gonna puppet master Scorsese. I'm gonna force him to give me a twin brother in a thing. It's never gonna work.
Listen, I've given points for trying.
I guess. But do we have to cut all that out? We probably have to cut all that out because
now the podcast starts. Hey, explain a podcast to me.
Well, it's sort of
because
like,
we're sitting in a room right now. We're sitting in a brick room with that looks like you maybe do some. Yeah, but it's not
kill room, a podcast room.
But it's not really doing anything. Like those things aren't doing anything.
These absorb sound.
They do.
They absorb
just like these absorb sound.
That's right.
But this doesn't. Screens.
This is bad.
Definitely doesn't.
No, that's good.
You would have, in a radio show, you would have glass, but in podcasts, you have stuff like that.
We have tiny water nubs.
And we have somebody on the computer over here doing something, I don't know, because we're actually talking and we're doing it. Edit notes.
And then Katie will start Googling
other
stuff.
You're writing down shit.
Yeah.
Which I probably has nothing to do with this show, has something to do with something.
It's half and half.
And we have an audience behind us that I don't know.
Yeah, Kyle's taking show notes and writing
They'll tell the upper echelon how it went.
I am the upper echelon. This is it. How'd it go?
Nobody who has a podcast who's upper echelon. Nobody. I don't know. No. I'm not saying that in a derogatory way.
He makes a point.
Dude, there's no such thing. Who has a radio show anymore? Howard Stern?
Howard does. And that's not even terrestrial radio anymore.
No.
There are terrestrial radio still hanging on.
Mike Francesa in New York still doing sports radio.
So explain really quickly, even though it's a total bore for you guys and everybody listening to this, except me.
Yep.
What is a podcast?
A podcast is an hour or so of audio entertainment that can be downloaded on demand whenever you choose.
Earth's internet.
You don't have to there at a certain time. Get it whenever you want, and you can listen to
it.
download a TED Talk or a
song.
Yeah. Exactly. And the beauty of kind of what became the podcast boom is that it became this medium where people could sit down and have a conversation. And it kind of humanizes to people listening, folks like yourself, where people just see, I see Josh in a lot of movies. I've seen him on short couch interviews, but you usually have to hit a couple points or do a bit. They're sound bites.
Yeah. This, we're not going for sound
bites. It's anti-soundbite culture is what it is.
Anti-soundbite culture.
And it's
a
very intimate form of media for people because they
put... So we're making love. We're not fucking.
We're making love. Yeah, we're making love. Yeah. We're making love doggy style.
You didn't have to put that in.
Why not?
No.
I think it's... Why not?
We're talking about love.
That's lust. We're talking about love.
We're talking about love.
You talked about doggy style and pulling hair and ropes and change. That's a different genre of podcast.
What if you have a nice back? I mean, this is really judgy. Well, I don't know if I appreciate the tone of this.
I do not have a nice back.
Love? Because I just did Conan, right? And it's those moments that you don't know what to say, so you put something out there, kind of like you just did about the back.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works and sometimes
it doesn't.
Sometimes it conjures an image that's just better left unconjured.
And then we just have a moment and then we move on. But the important thing...
But you have a great voice, though. Okay. So it makes up for...
Thank you, Josh. The important thing is to never spend too much time on those moments so then they just sort of skate by people.
Right? No, I know, but I'm here
to
exploit those.
But going back to that previous moment.
But that's the best. But but a great thing about a podcast is that because people usually listen to it with headphones, it's very intimate.
It is intimate.
And they kind of feel like they're sitting in here with us, and they listen to it in very very meaningful parts of their day. It can be when they're having good days, bad days, at work, on a treadmill.
It could be when they're making love, and it would be like a double whammy for them.
Sorry, baby. I just need to listen to Chris Arbeck talk to Josh Brolin while we do it.
I feel like, I'm not completely into it. I want my orgasm to be amazing this time. Let's listen to a podcast.
And that's going to make it amazing. I know. You know, it's weird.
I know. It sounds weird, but I'm telling you, it works.
No, I just,
Yeah, just plug that podcast in. Let's do it.
If you loved me, you would listen to this
podcast. You see, that's what I mean about conjuring something, and sometimes it falls flat, so I think we should move on.
Okay, no, I think we should exploit this bit as much as possible.
I bet you're going to say bitch. Let's exploit this bitch
until we drown out every...
That's all right. I'm willing to do that, too, whatever you
want
to
do. Have you done a lot of long-form chatty stuff, or is it mostly...
All up in the brain. I haven't done a lot of podcasts. I have a lot of people ask me, like in Gold's Gym, dude, will you do my podcast? which is why I wanted to know.
Yeah,
but like, dude, I have a podcast.
Now you know what you're going to be saying no to all the time.
No, like Bruce Buffer has a podcast, I'm a big UFC fan, so we talk about his podcast. I listened to a couple of his podcasts, which were good.
Yeah,
he had a porn star on there once. Speaking of making love, or the other thing we were talking about, but then he'll have Rousey on there. He'll have Holly Holm on there. He has some. I like it. I've always preferred this type of thing, which is, all joking aside, always preferred actually listening to a full conversation as opposed to a soundbite.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because soundbite culture is very much like a test. It's like, okay, you're on. You got 5 minutes. You got to dazzle everyone so that they'll go see your thing.
It's game show mentality.
You're going to answer the same couple of questions you always answer, and you get in, you get out, you get out.
Totally.
Yeah.
What was it like? Oh, my God. Okay. I know someone asked you this already. Slapping George Clooney. Oh, my God. How was that? What was that like?
Did you rehearse it? Did he? Literally. What did? How
it's
did that?
It's been asked 2,000 times in the last 2 weeks.
Has your okay, so about this. So has your ahead, answer evolved since the beginning? Did
it
you
is,
figure
I
out
just,
a way?
Yes. Yes, I did. No. Well, a lot of it is impromptu, but I said of what did I say most recently? I keep making it up. It's a great it's become a great challenge to me. I will. This is ruining my career totally. Well, right?
But this conversation,
yeah, because I'm no, not this conversation, no, oh. But conversations like this. So because it's I'm becoming more. I'm actually starting to feed off this stuff. I'm actually liking it. So the acting becomes very boring to me because it's all structured,
right?
Whereas this is unstructured,
absolutely,
and I prefer it.
Well, but I would imagine
like
that
we might have a new podcast host on our network.
Yeah. Now, does it pay well?
Oh God, no.
Well.
But you do get this.
Yep. As many of those waters as you want until we run out.
You get paid in water nubs. You can have up to 12 of them.
No. I have three left. Yeah, I've already done one already.
My friend, nine more where these came from.
My little stubby
waters. I don't
want to.
Let me sweeten the pot with nine more water nubs.
We have some behind.
Nine more water
nubs. We had a big problem wasting water, so we got the small ones, but now we don't give a shit about wasting plastic.
These don't hurt as much.
Oh, okay, Katie, calm down.
Katie, jeez.
Go to your Bernie Sanders rally.
We have to stop giving out water nubs to people.
Everyone's getting free water.
Free water for everybody. We're going to redistribute these water nubs.
I think
water nubs.
I think it's good. I think, you know, it seems like having those moments where you can actually connect with other human beings. Mm. Because I would imagine, I mean, what are you doing on the set most of the time? Are you focusing
this.
On what this? You'd sit and talk with people.
Yeah, or if you're on a Coen Brothers set, not. You know, they don't really.
What's the vibe?
No, the vibe is good. We just if there's nothing to, there's nobody really feeling the pressure to uphold the conversation, which is kind of great to be around, to an extent. And then when really nobody really cares about upholding the conversation or continuing or instigating conversation, then there's a lot of, you know, laconic kind of downtime.
Yeah.
You know, there's some grunts and there's some monosyllabic, you know, movement, but it's pretty dull.
Is it the kind of a set?
It's all being manifested in the movie.
Right. So that's where it's coming out.
Yeah.
Not off camera.
Yeah.
Is it the kind of, like, how do they run a set in terms of, do they call you in at 8, but just to have you there all day, or is it like they get you in, get
well,
you
Well, for me, for this movie, I was in, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, so they called me, I worked a lot. I worked almost every day. I think I had 2 days off the whole time. But yeah, I'm in at 5 or 6, and then I leave it, you know, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Maybe 7.
Do you prefer free time, or would you?
No.
No.
No, I do. I like free time. But I was just in North Carolina, and I was in the deep woods of North Carolina for 4 months. And it was, you know, between 5 and like 17 degrees every day. And, you know, after a while, it sounds great. Or when we did Everest.
Yeah.
We're out in the middle of nowhere, and we're actually climbing up to Everest, and we're in Nepal, and it's cold. And all of it sounds great when I talk to you in a really nice soundproof room.
Mm-hmm. But at the time,
after a while, it's work. It's work.
Does being some...
It's fucking. It's not making love. Do you know what I mean?
To
bring it full circle.
Are you the type of actor that needs to be submerged in the environment? Like, if we're going to do a movie about Everest, we need to be at Everest. Or you're like, you know, we could fake some of this in a studio.
No, but we did fake some of it in the studio, but I preferred actually being out there and doing it. Because when you fake
it... hang on. You read that script, though, right? You don't actually want to be on Everest.
No, but you did... No, you're right. You're right. No, you're right. You don't want to be... But we climbed up... toward Everest, to Everest, to the base of Everest.
So you went to base camp.
Yeah, we went to base camp. But we didn't climb up Everest. No, that's not for me.
Yeah, no.
That's not for me.
That's not for anyone.
But yeah, to fictitiously simulate, you know, in snow, maybe in Utah,
sure,
let's say.
Sure,
might be nice.
Yeah.
Might be nice. But we were actually in Nepal on Everest, and it wasn't until we got to the stages of London where they had 50-mile-an-hour fans, and then because they couldn't free – they said they would. They promised they would. They would figure out a way to freeze snow, to keep snow frozen, keep snow on the stage, but they couldn't figure it out, so they used salt instead.
The next best thing.
The next best thing. So that's – therefore – the reasoning behind wanting to be – at that point, I would have climbed Everest.
Sure. Sure.
So you're saying that having a high-powered fan blowing salt in your face is
not really not like the whole. Yeah. I know women love it, the whole exfoliation thing, but that's gotten to an extreme. That's like not bottle number two.
There we go.
Two out of four.
Well, you better
the slow podcast
down.
Is over.
You better slow four. Down. Oh no! You better hide these.
No. I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, he's good.
It's all good.
I got him more.
At what point in your career, because, I mean, obviously, I know that some people, and I don't know if you saw our chunk doll over there, but there's a chunk doll right behind Deb. See?
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, because I have a friend who was a guest on the show, and Chunk is one of his lawyers.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
No, I talked to him. He's one of the only guys that Sean Astin I see once in a while, but Chunk is the guy that I had the most respect for him on the set. He was 10 years old. When he stuck his hand, no. When they were pushing his hand in the blender, the Fratellis, he was actually crying. And I remember Spielberg and Donner coming from that set and going, "This kid's amazing. This kid's amazing." They weren't saying that about me, but they were saying about him. And he, you know, and of course that he's going to be the one that, you know, the standout. He's going to be the one that turns into a freaking entertainment lawyer and surprise the shit out of everyone. I'm not saying it.
Blowing salt.
Dude, I'm not saying it as exactly. I'm not saying it as a negative though. I think it's I give him a lot of credit. Is this worth anything?
No,
I don't think so because it's not an original. It's like a
I have a doubloon somewhere.
Oh, do you?
Are you serious? You kept it?
I did. I did. I think we kept a couple of them.
That
and
might
I don't
be
know.
Worth more than that.
I would assume it would be. I don't know really how much. Oh, this was $11.99 plus tax.
But tax is like 10% in California, so yeah. You know, like you track another
data
dollar
sloth
on
chunk
there.
Mouth Mikey. No brand.
That's series two. That'll be series two.
We can get one up and get the bandana and like mock it up.
I know, man. I do that anyway.
Is that how you work out a goal?
As you said, entertainment.
You can't tell me you haven't thought about going to Comic-Con cosplayed as brand.
I have. You have, man. I told you. I'm like, my career's over. I told you that. That I like all that stuff. When we went for Jonah Hex, we went and they talked about to when I went for Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a moment. Yeah, getting up on stage, putting that gauntlet on. So yes, if there was a reason to go for Goonies, which it's a little, you know, it's 32 years late, but 31 years late. If there were a Goonies 2, I don't know. I don't know what this character would look like. You know, if he'd still be wearing the shorts and the sweats.
He just never grew up. He's the one character that just never stopped.
I refuse to let it go. You've talked to those people, though. Those are like a lot of people in the 70s that are like that. They still have the shirt open down to the belly button.
Yeah, why fuck
they
with something that works?
They still dye their chest hair.
Yeah, why mess with a winning
formula? Yeah, but
formula?
Does it work? That's the thing. Does it work? But the Goonies still works. You're right.
I moderated that panel at Comic-Con when you came out and put
you
on
did
it. I did yeah it was a couple years ago now
yeah yeah
two
it was
years
a couple
ago.
Years
yeah.
ago god I tell you what was amazing about that panel, and I remember Robert saying, I don't want it to sound arrogant, but he just it was basically like a watch this moment without saying watch this, and he walked out on stage knowing how they were going to react. I've never seen anything like it. It was like watching Mick Jagger come out on stage.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's
incredible.
That's the audience. You know, those people, it's 7,000 people in Hall H.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people, they save up all year to go. They camp out the night before. They're
exactly.
sleeping out on the subway. When they get in,
6,000 people or 7,000
people. And then they get to see, you know, you and Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, and Chris Evans and Ruffalo. And it's a big – it's because it's – they all know.
I was there for Don Cheadle, but that's just me.
Someone was there for James Spader.
I don't know. James was there for James.
I was seeing
– James was there for James. That was awesome.
I love
James. The only person that wouldn't laugh at that joke is James. James. Uh-huh. Of course, you know that.
I mean, I love Chapter 2 of James Spader because he was the quintessential, like, bougie douchebag in every great 80s movie.
Totally. Amazing, too.
Just like the fucking feathered hair.
Like the Less Than Zero.
Absolutely. All the way up to Wolf, the Jack Nicholson movie.
Which he was great in, actually.
He was great in it.
Mike Nichols.
And then just kind of, like, disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
and then came back, shaved head, like black.
Probably like what we did a movie, me and him and Minnie Driver. I don't even remember what it was called. I don't know if it ever came out. It was really, really bad. But he and I got along really, really well. And I don't know why, but I made him laugh a lot. And it was, I liked making him laugh. And I remember I was offered a series after, like maybe 6 months after that movie was over and we were still talking. And I called him and I said, would you do a series? Because I wasn't sure, because I loved the idea of doing movies and I didn't like the idea of doing series, which were very different back then than they are now. Sure. Limited series, and everybody's like having this resurgence. Mm-hmm. The best writers are on limited series now and all that. So he said, no, man, TV is for, like, pigs or whatever he said. And then what did he do? What was the resurgence of James Spader?
Blacklist, yeah.
Was Blacklist? No, but Boston. No, exactly.
Oh, Boston Legal.
No.
Oh,
no.
We're going back.
Back further. Go back further, which was, God, man, there was one. What was the show before Boston Legal for James Spader? I know what it was for Robert Downey Jr., and it was Ally McBeal. Remember when he would do those things and he'd come on, he did the piano and he'd sing? Well, Spader had one of those too, and I don't know what it was, but then it was Boston.
Was it another
Legal.
David E. Kelly show?
I don't know.
Because it could have been Boston Public.
We'll look it up. Or somebody Katie's will look it up it during.
Oh, the practice. Yes.
That's what it was.
Oh.
Yeah. I was going to say Alf, but I would have been wrong.
No,
I
practice
been wrong.
Is who was the showrunner on the practice?
Wasn't that
was David E.
Was
Kelly?
Kelly? Yeah.
I think it was. God, dude, right there. Good freaking memory.
Nice.
That's great.
Hey, listen, that's I got to remember. Did you know who's married to Michelle Pfeiffer? I got to remember.
The only pigs do television. Did you like? Did you send him a little stuffed pig and be like, congratulations?
No, I should have. I remember trying to use a
late.
Word with him. I was in my mid-20s, and I used, like, it wasn't vilification. It was, like, something like that. It's called sesquipedalianistic. And sesquipedalianistic is when you use words that are 50-cent words when smaller words would be much more effective. Right? And it was like, God, I'll remember the word in a second. But he goes, that was the greatest pause. He goes, what did you just say? And I had even fucked up the word when I said it. Like there was some trip over one of the, you know, 17 syllables. So I didn't talk to him after that. I didn't want to.
That was it.
Yes. No, that was basically the end of the relationship. And then I saw him with you at that panel. And I hadn't seen him in years and years and years and years.
Should have used the word again.
And he said, call me, you know, like, hey, you know, I'm on this show, this fucking series, man. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, man. I go, yeah, you know what? You're succeeding highly is what you're doing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, he definitely...
That's part of his charm, though, is he has that thing, you know. Fuck.
But he's... But I understand, though, because he must have come out of that period when he first started that, you know, film people don't do television.
Well, exactly.
Those things don't meet.
Totally. No, you start with television, you die with television.
And now, some of the best content is on you know...
Purely.
Like, Netflix or cable or limited series like
Amazon.
Amazon.
No, all the great stuff
that should have been a movie in 1998.
Yeah,
like totally.
Like that Jennifer Lopez Ray Liotta show. I'm like, oh, I would have watched that right after Out of Sight. That
no, totally. And did you see that show?
I didn't watch it.
Shades
no.
of Blue? I haven't seen it.
It looks good. It actually looks good, does it not?
But it looks like something that should have been an hour and a half and I could have then left.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You think you know what I mean? I thought it was a compliment, but it's not necessarily a compliment.
I gotta watch this all year.
Come on!
I
don't have to do anything.
I gotta watch this shit. You're making me watch this shit all year.
I think like all those Ashley Judd movies were an extended. Where like they were just all episodes of the same series, right?
Like
she had a run of like
Along Came the Spider. Double Jeopardy.
There were a couple.
Kiss the Girls.
There was like
and I don't mean this insultingly, but it was the same movie.
Yeah.
It was like a limited series.
Yeah.
And then one would be Morgan Freeman and one would be...
This is interesting.
What?
We should contact these screenwriters who wrote those and say, would you like to do a limited series?
They're like, we already did it.
We did it. In 98.
We were ahead of the curve.
Well, we're going to shorten it and we're going to pay you every week.
But do you like being stuck That's with a character for a while or do you like just kind of getting it out of the way and then moving
getting
on?
Getting it
and
out of the
way.
It's probably six series. None of them lasted except for... The Young Riders. I did The Young Riders with Anthony Zerbe and Stephen Baldwin. And Stephen Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin. That was a pain in the ass. Stephen Baldwin. For 3 years. And but that was fun. We had a good time. And it was a Western. But no, I don't like that. I did a series. What was the last series?
second to last series I did was a thing called Mr. Sterling that was set up, ready, to be a big hit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's always the...
Until nobody saw it. And then they got confused because in order to have a big hit, apparently people have to watch
the show.
That's
part of the formula for that.
I guess that's part of
the equation. I've wanted someone for so long to do like a supercut of all the times Al Michaels or Jim Nance has had to promote some bullshit CBS or NBC show that is gone. And, right. But it was like the fucking Sunday Night Football. We're going to really rev this thing up.
And the poor actors on that show, they're the network's behind this. They're putting it right behind football. It can't fail.
Totally.
Those words are. If anyone ever says those words, I'm like, you just fucking ruined it.
Exactly.
You can't say that.
So,
you can't say that.
Internet, please make that supercut so I can watch it.
But with movies, you know, you do them and then do you just do them and forget about them, or do you?
No, you don't forget about them. Like this last one, I like the guy. Like I saw the movie recently, and I told you I was in the woods of South Carolina doing this Danny McBride movie, and I hadn't seen Hail Caesar, and a lot of times I'll sit there and I'll watch them edit because I like them and they're my buddies. And as much shit as I talk about them, I really enjoy them thoroughly. And they're just nonplussed. They don't have there's no pretense. There's no ego. There's like so I enjoy watching them. You know, in their process and their economic process of editing, and I wasn't able to do that. So I saw the movie pretty cleanly, and the movie's good. I mean, a lot of times you watch a movie, you work your ass off, and you totally immerse yourself in every way that you can. You try to create as much variation as you can. So they have stuff to work it with. If tonally it's not working, they go, well, he did do a take that was kind of off and like kind of one for, you know, the cutting room floor, but it actually works better with what we're trying. You know, it's more interesting. And then you watch the movie and you go, what the fuck happened? You know? And I have a few like that, you know? And then with this, you know, you watch it and you go, God, I love being in a good movie. It's like really Flirting with Disaster,
yeah.
No Country for Old Men.
Yes.
There's a few out there, Milk, you know, that I feel really, really good about.
Did you feel it on the set when it was happening?
No, you never do.
You never do.
Never do. It's usually the opposite. Like Sicario, I did a movie, Sicario,
yeah, of course.
And I finished that movie and I was like, well, that didn't work.
Oh, that's great.
That's too. And I've said that to Denis. I've said that to Roger Deakins. And I was just like, you know, it was just, it was just, I don't know structurally where it's at. And it was this and the flip flops. And is that stupid? And, you know, and then people watch it and they're like, oh my God, the flip flops. You know, what was it like slapping Clooney? And then it works. And then you start to realize that people, like, you don't ever put down a film. It's like I did a film. My second film was called Thrashing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the reason why I went to New York, thinking at that moment that New York was the only place on earth that you can actually become an actor.
Yes.
It's that you have to go to New York if you want to be any kind of an actor.
And this was 1986.
1986, yeah, 1985, 1986, once it came out, and after doing an episode of Highway to Heaven with Michael Landon.
Oh, I have all my Michael Landon questions that we're
going
to
get
to. No, not really, but you have any answers.
Oh, no, but that would be good, though. That would make for an interesting podcast.
Tell me. the long-awaited Highway to Heaven podcast.
Exactly.
Where we break down every episode.
But anyway, no, let me just finish this. You do a movie that you don't like, that you watched and you realized, I have to learn this acting thing, otherwise I should quit, to save people the pain that they have to experience watching what I create. And then years later, somebody says, wow, you were in Thrashing. And you go, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And I didn't mean it. And then you realize after a while that no, it's not up to you to apologize. It's not up to you to judge it. It's not up for you to even project how you feel about the movie, because lives have been built on Thrashing. Do you know what I mean? And I'm serious. They were like, dude, I started skateboarding because of that movie and it changed my life and my family. And I was going through this at the time and you saved my life, man.
So you're not the best judge.
Great. You're not a judge. You shouldn't judge at all. At all. Acting can have a massive impact whether you think you suck or not.
When I was at
movies can.
I was doing New York Comic Con one year and it was the Tomorrowland panel. And George Clooney was on the panel, and the first thing I said to him on the panel was, hey, sweet Bruce Wayne cosplay, which I thought was a funny joke because he played a Batman.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And he instantly was like, hey, I just want to apologize for that. I know about the nipples on the suit. Yeah. I apologize to Adam Westbeck. Like, he was so self-deprecating about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But,
shameful.
But, you know, I...
even though he wasn't the Darkest Night, it was fun, and he was fun.
Sure, it was fun.
But to even see a guy like Clooney in his head
he
go,
was fun.
Oh, I feel like yeah. I need to apologize.
I blew it for everybody on the planet. And also, it's kind of arrogant if you think about it.
He was on the other side.
Yeah,
Bruce
yeah.
Wayne. He was an excellent Bruce Wayne.
He was,
but
he was
not a great Batman. Not a great Batman. Not a great.
I'm
Batman.
Very curious about seeing this new Batman. I'm actually.
I know.
Very. I just saw the poster. We were driving through Westwood, mm-hmm. and I looked to my left at this old movie theater that I used to go to, and there was the face of Batman and the face of Superman.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
We're all cautious, but yeah. but we're always cautious. I mean, remember Val Kilmer?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember.
Forever, not as bad as people remember. Not great.
Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer in that movie is great. I think yeah. him as Batman, it's a pretty decent
yeah.
attempt at a Batman movie.
Attempt. Like, the greatest Batman so far is the first of Christian Bale.
Yes.
It's the greatest movie, at least.
Yes, you're 100%.
It's the greatest movie.
Because the original... Well, unless
I count Kevin Conroy from Batman the Animated Series.
Kevin Conroy is amazing. Batman the Animated Series.
Great. But then, of course, you count him.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But even when you watch Tim Burton's original one, you know, as much as I love Tim Burton, that's one of the movies that does not really hold up because it's very, very, very dated.
It's very dated because you have this what they did on the Batman series, which is, by the way, where my mother met my father. My dad played a cop on the Batman series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I saw it recently. It was very funny. He was not very good. But
did you just happen to catch it, or did you watch it deliberately?
I think my brother sent it to me. My brother sent me a YouTube version. But you know how they used to do the diddle 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 diddle, and they Dutch the camera, especially when Joker came out. They Dutch the camera, and that was Tim Burton's version when he did it. He Dutched the camera a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right. He did a lot of Dutching. That was his homage.
Did you ever talk to your parents about working on the original Batman series?
No, I did. I talked to my mom about it. My mom told me that she was assistant casting on the series of Batman. And then my dad did an episode, and that's where they met through his – was it his manager or his buddy? I can't remember. But he set him up, and they were married 12 days later.
The 60s. People didn't really date. They were just
actually.
Like, hey, you seem nice. Let's get hitched.
My mom's from Texas, and she just liked to make things happen. She made that happen, and she made me happen.
That's fantastic. You are here because of Batman.
I am.
This really does –
It resonates.
I think you would have been a good Batman.
I don't, you know, I told you, I talked to them. I didn't tell you, but I'm telling you now. I talked to them. I talked to them about it. I talked to him. What's his name? Zach.
Mm-hmm. Zack Snyder.
Yeah. But no, Ben. Ben's a good pick.
You'd be a good Harvey Dent.
Be a good Harvey. Yeah, but I don't, that doesn't interest me.
No.
It doesn't. No, the other thing interested me. But no, the Harvey Dent didn't. And I don't know. I'll talk to you about it off the air.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not recording anymore.
Exactly.
Blatantly lying.
No.
And then you can tell us how much Thanos is going to appear.
Harvey Dent, why it doesn't resonate? Why doesn't it resonate? Two-Face resonates.
Sure.
Is that Harvey Dent?
That is Harvey Dent, yeah.
I mean, So this is what I'm thinking is when I saw
Batman Forever.
Right.
Yeah.
God, man.
Tommy Lee Jones.
You're fucking good, dude.
That's right.
He's
That's
a Wikipedia.
You're good. That's
Matt's a Wikipedia.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that very much. And I enjoy Tommy when he comes out of his comfort zone, mm-hmm. which I think he's very good at, and does that crazy thing.
I think he saw Jim Carrey and was like, oh, fuck. All right. Here we
go.
Okay.
He did that in Natural Born Killer, too.
Yeah.
Killers, too.
Now, Tommy Lee Jones.
Sorry, dude.
He seems like a fun-loving guy. Seems like a fun-loving
guy. Funny.
Loves to laugh.
Tommy, stop.
Loves to have a good time.
Tommy, stop.
I mean, his face is always frozen in a smile.
I love Tommy Lee Jones.
I think he's fucking amazing.
Me too. But I've done three movies with him.
Yes, but where I'm getting at is, how do you play a young Tommy Lee Jones, and how does he take that?
I have no idea.
You didn't?
To this day. I have no idea. No, you don't ask. Hey, what do you think of what I did?
Hey, this
about
is you.
Chief.
Yeah, he didn't go, good job, kid.
Never.
Come on.
I swear to God. But isn't that in character for who he is? You know, like cutting back to him at the Oscars or whatever in that frozen non-smile. It's great. You know, you have to have Tommy's in the world. You have to. And I'm very happy because when they asked me to play that, Barry Sonnenfeld asked me to play it because I had done an impression of him while we were out drinking one day with the Coens or whatever. And I had done a bad impression. And then Barry was like, hey, Brolin, you know, I think we're going to do this movie. And, you know, you do Tommy. It's funny.
was he wearing a cowboy hat when he did that? Or
who? Yeah, Barry. Barry was. And his cowboy hat. Dude, you're amazing. Amazing. Yeah. But he did. He had the cowboy hat on and the boots when we were out. And then when I was shitting my pants and I was down in Mexico and I had my computer. I was with a couple of friends down there who were in another apartment because I was basically in my apartment for 8 hours a day watching Men in Black 1. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the second one. Uh-huh. It was a different character. If you actually watch Tommy, it's a different character. It's not the same character. So even though it's supposed to be. And then I watched it. So I must have watched it 30 or 40 times and I'd take GarageBand out and I'd just do one line. And I'd try to get the line. And I could not get anything. And I was like, this is I've made a huge fucking mistake. There's only room for massive failure here. And I can't even begin to imagine succeeding at this now. And it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And then I got a syllable. And I was like, holy shit. And then I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up the next morning and be gone. And I'd get a syllable again 2 days later. And then I'd go drinking and then I'd go talk to the Mexicans down there and in Tommy voice because I was too afraid to do it in America. Or at least the United States. And then finally I got the courage enough to do it in America. And then finally once I showed up on the set, I was comfortable enough with it to do it in front of Barry. And I remember after the first take, Barry came around the corner and he had tears streaming down his face. And then I looked at Will for an explanation. Is he happy? Is he sad? Does he feel like he failed already? Is he stoked? And Will was laughing hysterically. So he couldn't even talk. He was laughing so loud. And then I looked from Will to Barry, who was crying hysterically, back to Will, who was laughing hysterically.
And you have no idea what's going on.
I still don't to this day. No idea.
Oh, God.
But it seems like, just from stuff that I've read about you and even hearing you talk about like Thrasher, it seems like
Thrashin.
Sounds like it sounds like you're. I'm sorry. I really
just
God,
get it right.
Fuck bro. Everything.
Don't even turn that
Don't
off.
Don't throw your keys. You need those.
No, you're at it.
Here, wait.
That's just rude.
I didn't have enough money. Yeah, thank you.
Thrashin.
Barry Sonnenfeld shot Adam's Family here, and Adam's Family Values on this
here
lot,
this on this lot.
Yep,
yeah, that was good right actually. There.
Adam's Very Family good. Values was phenomenal.
Adam's it
was
Family, true. Adam's Family is great.
First one's good. Second one's better.
The first one I saw.
Second one is better.
I saw the first one 2 summers ago at the cemetery.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which I saw. The last thing I saw there was Fast Times.
Nice.
Oh, which is great.
It totally great. Holds up.
It does hold
but, like,
up.
That was
it totally
the surprising thing about Adam's Family was how much the jokes hit still
first
and how
second.
Funny it was. The first one. It was
first
the first
one.
Yeah. It was amazing.
But the second with Peter McNichol.
Yes.
And
I don't remember. I remember
too.
The first
the camp
one.
Counselors where they're camp counselors and they go to the camp. It is
Joan Cusack's in it.
Yeah.
Joan?
Yeah.
Joan Cusack's in it. It's spectacular. It's really, really, really. Christine Baranski's in it.
I would love to see Joan in another movie.
Oh, yeah. Of
like,
course.
Joan was in like every great movie and she was always good.
Did you watch her on Shameless on Showtime?
No.
She was great in that.
She's always great. She's
of course
always
she is.
Been great in everything.
I didn't know that.
There's
I will.
Even in 16 Candles where she's a girl with a brace trying to drink from a fountain and then dabs her mouth with the tiny little skirt on
That's
her sweatshirt.
Amazing.
She's flawless every single time. Joan Cusack is flawless.
Dude, that description was awesome.
That's totally what it was.
But it's 16 Candles.
Still holds up. But but it sounds like sometimes I get the sense, just from stuff that I've read about you, feel like you're hard on yourself sometimes. You're like, oh, that movie, I'll probably never. Do you think that's true?
That I'm hard on myself?
Yeah.
When I'm doing it, I'm hard on myself, and then I'm hard on myself afterwards because it's like, you know, it's a tone to take on podcasts and stuff like that. But I am. When I'm doing it, I am. You know, I said this. I was talking to my daughter. My daughter has this thing coming out on Showtime. It's called the Lost Girls, Manson family, right? Mm-hmm. And she plays one of the Manson girls, and she's amazing in it, right? And she, we were talking, and just, and I'd never talked to my daughter about work, and she's an adult now, she's 22 and all that. And I was like, the thing is, man, is that you have to earn your check. We're in a really strange business. And even if it does, I mean, especially if it does well, there's something about you that's like, yeah, but I didn't really do anything.
Don't you think it shouldn't feel like anything?
Yes. Ultimately, it should feel like it shouldn't feel like anything to you when you watch it.
Right.
But to us, we should always be prepared, always be professional, always give 100%, always, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. But and even though you only get, you know, 4 to 5 hours sleep a night for 3 months, and you go a little crazy. I mean, I've been out in the woods, man, for 4 months. I'm a little, the interviews are going good because I can't think about them. I'm not nervous at all, only, purely because I literally don't have the energy to be.
You were stuck in a forest for a while.
I was stuck in a forest for
with
a long
Danny McBride.
While.
Were you and Danny McBride remaking The Revenant already?
No, The Revenant.
Danny plays the bear.
With the exactly. I've heard stories about that bear.
It was a little handsy. Yeah, the bear was a little handsy.
I thought that was a really good movie.
I agree.
But they had hot tubs and stuff. We did not.
Oh, someone's jealous. I got a bone and needs to update
I got
his
a bone
rider.
With it. Yeah, exactly. Totally.
I mean, it is interesting that your daughter is a part of this multi-generational acting family.
Yeah, totally embrace it now.
And you, I mean, what did you take away from that and your dad that you passed down? I mean, what did you learn?
There was no passing down. That's what's so funny. Sam Rubin, he interviewed my daughter and a couple of those kids, and they were and basically asked like the actor dad kind of question. And she and my daughter said the greatest answer I've ever heard. I don't know, man. A girl saying that too, which I thought was even better than if I had said it. And then I saw him, and I was like, he was like, hey, I talked to your daughter. I was like, I know, man. But there's nothing handed down. It's in like a plumber, and his son followed in his footsteps.
Well,
and all
what
that.
Cult TV show did you meet her mother on?
Did it? Oh, dude, how do you? Oh, no way.
No, I'm seriously asking because if your dad met your mother. On Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Which
no,
is a cult TV
it
show.
Sounds like there might be a.
No, but I did. I met my kid's mom on a series that I did when I was 19 called Private Eye. Yeah. Which was kind of like, you know, people actually still go back. It's not like cult, like what we were talking about, but where people still go because it was 10 episodes, but it was all the guys from Hill Street, Miami Vice, and St. Elsewhere that got together and did, to this day, the most expensive pilot ever done. And it was me and this guy named Michael Woods. Anyway, I met her on that thing. And
That's
it took
amazing.
Place in the 1950s. And I had a pompadour that they said needed a building permit. I drove around a 49 Merc. It was really cool. It was very cult-ish.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And that's where I met her. Yeah.
Wow, but of course, you have to be weaving the Brolin tapestry here.
It's difficult to meet people anyway. But when you have such a weird, almost transient lifestyle.
Totally.
As an actor, like, how do you...
Yeah, like carnies.
Yeah, kind of.
But that's what it is. Yeah. Yeah, we all have limps and tattoos, and we all have, you know, a couple of teeth left.
Y'all get up in the morning and do a show.
But at what point did you start to feel okay with everything? Or what, did you ever feel secure? Do you always feel like there's a fire under your feet, or do you always... Or does it...
Yeah, but in a good way. I mean, don't you want the responsibility of... I mean, you're waiting in the parking lot very sweetly with your nice jacket and all that.
Yeah,
and I get out of the car, you're like, hey, man. How are you? And you're playing it cool. It's all good.
Yeah.
And you're going, how the fuck is this podcast going to go?
Yeah, I never know.
You have no idea.
No.
So if you don't care, and you're playing it cool, if you don't care, it will come across and it will be a different kind of podcast.
Sure.
But if you play it too, like, fuck, this is great, dude. I was this, and Thanos, and with this, and the Goonies, and then all that. And then that will.
I did a lot of
no,
that.
You did not. Okay, you did like not, actually. You did not. But then you have to kind of instigate. Where it's what's going to happen? Where it's going? You have to finesse it. It's a lot of stress, is what I'm saying.
I feel
is it
like
not?
You, it. Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, like I've done so much. I've done this so many times that I don't. I feel like it goes where it goes, and also I do care, but I also care enough to let it go. Because if you care so much that you're like, this has to be perfect, and that's
you
never
give
worked.
Up, but you let it
it's
go.
It's never worked when you try to over-engineer something or you try to hug something to death,
right.
Lenny style. Like it never works.
Okay, so let's take let's say a 1-minute segment,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how that segment is.
Okay,
And then we start to – not that we're doing – it's not an exercise, okay, but okay. I'm just putting together a scenario. So he was like, okay.
He's so literal. Okay, okay. So literal.
So I mean, and my first word is –
freeze
is,
in the location.
Yeah, freeze.
I need an occupation.
So you look at that one-minute segment. It's an important one-minute segment. It's the only one that's going to go on the air. And then you start to – and you can, with the person that you're doing it with, you start to reconstruct it. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about it? Where's a pause? Where do we need to breathe in order for that laugh to work? We can't be funny the whole time.
Right.
We got – that's what making movies is like.
And when you have to do something 20 times
– yeah.
I mean, it's – it is trying to find, you know,
for one angle 20
for
times.
For one angle 20 times.
And say there's 9 different angles throughout the day.
But I always wonder.
Gonna blow your mind right now. What about 9 cameras?
What about 9 cameras? Which saying. I've done. Which I've saying. Done with Ridley Scott.
Of course.
Yeah.
We but I was, that's why people cameras. Like fucking Ridley Scott so much.
Dude, 9 cameras.
Actors
cameras,
love Ridley Scott, and I've tried to figure it out, and you just nailed
9
it.
9 cameras.
Shoot with
you
9
go
cameras.
And you do it. You don't even know where the camera is.
Yeah.
They shot Prometheus in 4 days. I don't know if you know that. Yeah. Done.
No.
Scott even got out.
I think it was written in 4 days. Just kidding. I love Damon Lindelof.
I liked Prometheus a lot.
That would be a way better joke if there wasn't a Prometheus 2 actually happening.
It's happening. I really like Prometheus a lot. But I always think about just the way things evolve, and then once you kind of get into something and it becomes organic and you get it in your molecules, when you've done something 20 times, do you ever get to the point where you go, ah, fuck, I think I just figured it out, but now it's way in the back, and I can't go back to doing it the way that I've figured out now.
Yeah, but that's why you have to let what you just said, you have to do with every take.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Duvall said it the best. You have to treat every take like a rehearsal. But then also, don't forget, if you eat lunch – like, okay, we got a break for lunch. Then you come back, your brain's literally toast because you've just eaten lunch. So all that energy, because you've woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning, only had 5 hours sleep for the last. See, I'm talking faster now because it's like I'm conjuring energy.
You're there
just to
do think about it.
So you eat, could be fucked. Like I go, I'll stick with the vegetables because if I eat the meat, I'm going to get tired and I'll literally start to forget entire scenes. It's.
I kind of think there should be an acting program that is about all this other ancillary shit where you go, like you do your scene really fast and like, okay, we break for lunch. You go out to a lunch truck and they give you like tri-tip or whatever they serve, like where everyone gets stomach aches, you know, because the food's really heavy and they got to go back and do their scene and then they have to do press junkets and then they have to, like, everything that surrounds it.
Totally.
Just to show people, like, are you sure
this
is what you want to do? Because the thing that you say you want to do is what you will actually spend the least time doing.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and can you imagine, by the way, let's put something else on it and go back to like Nick Nolte days.
Yeah.
Of like in the 70s, you know, when they'd get out gauze and they'd like put cocaine in the gauze and roll it up and shove it up their ass.
Oh my God.
So they didn't, you know, get their nose
all stuck out.
You know, I mean, fantastic. The days, the great
days. I didn't even know that's something a person could do.
No, I just made that up. But
it sounds totally plausible.
Oh, no, it is plausible because I made it up about Nick Nolte. I didn't make it up about other people.
That's the thing.
About other
people. I got news for you. Nick Nolte's never going to hear this.
No.
Hey, Josh, it's Nolte. I got a bone to pick.
That's not true because Nolte's the kind of guy, because I've known him for a long time, he's the kind of guy, like, if he's not taking his blood and, like, studying his blood, he's probably listening to podcasts.
Man, I found this great thing. They're called podcasts. You know, have a sip.
Really helped fill the opening. The gauze left.
Exactly.
Stop doing that.
No, but, like, great stories back then, and people would act like that. They would act. They would actually professionally go to work. And be like
super fucked up.
Super fucked up.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me.
But it's difficult. And, you know,
I could never do that.
No.
Whatever reputation I had that was not true, I could never, ever, ever do it. I couldn't imagine. I know even people would they'd smoke pot and they'd actually act better.
Well, that's what they would say about Kelsey Grammer on Cheers, like, because he was drinking a lot at that time.
Oh, right.
And they would say that he'd be like a mess and then. Yeah. Action, and then he'd nail it
on it,
and then back to being a mess immediately.
Still not healthy, and you still can't maintain that for long.
That's,
no,
especially that's why he doesn't drink anymore.
Yeah.
Especially as you get older, you just can't maintain that anymore. Yeah. It's not. I mean,
can't
like,
maintain much when you get older. Can't maintain your.
It's shocking
pee.
To me. The older you get, how much,
erections,
how many steps,
erections,
how many steps
maintain.
You have to do just to feel okay.
Yeah,
just to like. Anyone who's like 25
Yeah.
You would take for granted that you just wake up feeling okay.
Yeah.
And not like, oh, I got to, oh, that's weird. I'm like, so I know. That's kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, yeah. It's not about involuntary anymore.
When I was in college, I was playing a golf course, and old men would fart around each other all the time, and none of, there was just like this code. No. They never acknowledge it.
Yeah, but I hate that. That makes me so irritated. I don't understand that. And then nobody laughs. It's freaking funny, man. And if you don't laugh, that's not okay. Like, you should be, that should be it. Like, euthanasia right there.
I mean, it, I would have spent most of my time pointing and laughing at flatulent old men if that were the case. These were largely humorless people, though.
That doesn't matter. Farting's funny to everybody. Unless you're in Russia, and then what is it like if you're in Copenhagen or something and you burp, it's actually like it's a nicety.
Yeah.
It's a compliment.
I believe in Japan as well.
Is it? Yeah.
I believe in Japan, it is a signal of this was a good meal. This was an enjoyable.
Honoring
an
the
enjoyable
meal that you just had.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, that's just freaking weird. But it's the farting thing is funny, and it should be in Japan also.
It should be. Farting is funny everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere you go.
Funny. Dude, that wasn't even funny what I just did, and five people behind me just cracked up. That's farting.
Putin, like,
they can't see it.
Even Putin laughs at farts.
Absolutely.
Even Putin.
As well he
even
should.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Laughs at farts.
Actually, I think maybe he doesn't.
No, I bet you he does. I bet you he'll pull out a leg lifter.
On the set of Space Cowboys, I'm sure James Garner was farting up a storm in that cockpit. Exactly. Eastwood's like, ah, fuck, James.
What are you doing up there? Cut. Can we cut, please? Oh, God.
I did.
Laughing his ass off.
Garner's been cutting for the last hour.
Exactly. Duvall gets going. Oh, that's a
James
good cast.
That is a good
that's
cast.
A good, cast.
Right? Good cast.
The outtakes of that must be kind of amazing.
I know. Sure. I wish they had them. Yeah.
Have you ever worked with someone that freaked you out, that you thought that you had to kind of get around your fandom? Or you, once you get on a set, are you pretty much like, nah, we're all actors and everyone's all the same?
I get nervous. I mean, I do get nervous. I got nervous in Men in Black, but I don't know if it was because of anybody. I mean, I like Will and all, but we went outside. Maybe it was because of this. So we went to the Bronx, and nobody had shot in the Bronx for a while. And we went to a bowling alley, and we got there at like 5 a.m. There was nobody there. I mean, and it's not like city. It's open in big parking lots and stuff. And we went in to rehearse for an hour. There was nobody there when we got there. Nobody. Nobody was awake. And then we got there. We went into rehearse. We came out, and there were 1,000 people outside.
Oh, Jesus.
Screaming at the top of their lungs when Will came out. And then I came out afterwards. And nobody. There was like one dude that was like, Goonies! You know. But there 1,000 people went insane. And I remember after that whole day I was nervous, and I wasn't. I'm just realizing it now. But no, to answer your question, who?
It's like the 1,000 people that are there to run Will's bus.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You heard about that too. There was a great story about the bus because I came. Somebody called me when we were driving to work, and they said, "Hey, Will needs to use. They need to put. They need to put Will in your trailer because there was a short in his trailer, his massive trailer." And I was like, I was not okay with it. I was like, what the fuck? What do you mean, man? He's going to put him in my trailer. Why don't they just put him on stage? You're right at the stage right there. Why do I have to put him in my trailer? Why do I not get a trailer? Because his two-story trailer, like, blew a fuse. Right. That's not very nice. Treat me like shit. And they were like, and I looked at the assistant, and I was like, what? And she goes, it's just okay, and they're gonna change it, and I'm sure they're gonna. And finally, I was like, yeah, I'm okay with it, I'm all right with it. But I really wasn't.
Right.
So I got there, and then the transpo guys. I always get along with transpo guys, and they came up to me and they go, hey man, I'm sorry, we're gonna set you up on stage. There's a little tiny room in there. If we just go in there, it's fine. I was like, it's all right. I just don't understand, but it's okay. It's all right. And they say, just come over here, and then so I go back, and then they say, and they put two chairs, and they put Will's security in front of my trailer, which pissed me off even more. I was like, fuck Will. You know? Because I said, yeah, I can't even get by the trailer. My own trailer.
Excuse me, sir, can I help you? Can I help you?
So they take me back here and they go, look, the door's over here. You can't go in this one, but the door's over here. And they took me back. And then it was revealed that they had gotten a VW bus
They had built a roof on it. They opened the side doors. They carpeted it. They put a little TV in there. They put a chair as my new trailer.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Which is pretty great, man.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
How long before you got your actual trailer back?
No, I got it back right away. Will didn't even know about the joke.
He didn't know
No.
it.
No, and then I tried to tell him, and he was like, "Oh, that's funny."
That's funny. I'll be upstairs
yeah,
in my trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be on the second level of my trailer.
That's a funny joke. That's amazing. Yeah, and they did that to you just now? Wow. I'll see you on set.
Can't hear you over the sauna. Exactly.
And then the top level just disconnects. And
yeah, totally.
And
then, that, yeah, then the security window closed. Locked twice.
But I was thinking, like, especially with the Coen brothers, because I think about Raising Arizona. At that point, they weren't super famous yet. They'd had a couple things under
their
belt, but it was right at the beginning. But I look at a movie like Raising Arizona, and then the actors, and then they're going, so you know, just go farther, like, because everyone somehow their genius is having everyone go about as far as someone could possibly go until it almost breaks, and somehow it's grounded.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about them that allows that to happen?
I don't know. It's probably in the writing or something. I mean, how old was Nick Cage back then? 21?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't look 21, but he was – I mean, he looks young now in hindsight.
Right.
But he was,
well, his,
like,
hairline has never looked 21.
No, well, that was maybe it. That was like a 26-year-old hairline or something. But I don't know, man. They create – There's that. Woody Allen has this too, where you just want to, and I don't say this like out of idolatry and all, but you want to please them. You want to, like, on Hail Caesar, everybody came on set so prepared, except maybe George. George kind of just fumbles through everything, and you know, and then you see it and you go, how does it work that well? I mean, he really is good at playing an idiot. He is for them.
Yeah.
He's really good at it. You got to be a smart guy to play it. I mean, if you look at Alden, you didn't see the movie.
I haven't seen it.
Alden, Ehrenreich, who's like the discovery in this movie, plays an absolute total idiot, like old school idiot, like young George idiot. Mm-hmm. And he's a total standout. He's amazing. So I don't know what that is. They just find people who who have that sense about them. I don't know. I kind of played a simple guy in, you know, what was it called? No Country.
No Country for Old Men.
I forgot that.
You're really good in that. You should see it.
Oh, thanks.
You're really good in it. Yeah. But I think when you read
I
the
love
script,
you say no agua.
No agua. No agua.
I mean, you could have just fucking gave him the guy some water. I'm just saying.
I know.
Taking his money.
Why'd you go back? Why'd you go back?
What's wrong with you?
You're an idiot.
But you read a script like that, and you're like, friendo.
Friendo.
Are you sure this is gonna play? Just trust us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, wherever you have our devs, like, how do you? How much of a Coen Brothers movie is on the page?
All of it.
So you see all of it on the page.
You see all of it on the page, and if they don't, they're like, you know, they'll get in there and they'll direct. They're very obviously capable of directing, and they'll go in there and they'll say, "Well, let's try a little," but they don't do that very often. I mean, it's just, you just get it. They cast well. They cast with people who they know is going to get them tonally. I think maybe that comes across in a conversation or something. We ask a lot of questions. Before I did Hail Caesar, I asked a lot of questions. I put myself on tape. I sent it to them. I said, what do you think of this? Like, is this too New Jersey? Is this too much cadence, like 50s cadence? Is this boring? Is it too impersonal? So you figure all that stuff out before. And then once you get on the set, there's a rhythm and the rhythm in No Country is very different than the rhythm in True Grit, which is very different than the rhythm in Hail Caesar.
And are they just dictating all of that at the time or later?
Collaboratively. Collaboratively. They're getting together with you and they're saying, but they don't say much. So you ask the question. Like, what do you think about this? Like, what should we do? Should it be faster? No. Slow it down. It's hard for me to explain because we don't talk about a lot. You know, how am I doing? You know, if I finish a scene, I don't look to them for approval, put it that way, because there's going to be none.
Right.
And it's not because they don't want to give approval, but we're there to work.
Right.
So we do have a lot of fun, but I know they're thinking about how is this going to work within the big picture.
And they don't have time to massage your ego.
No.
Yeah.
They have they I don't even know if it's possible.
I think it's amazing that you can watch dailies. I think a lot of people can't watch dailies, or the directors don't want them watching dailies because they want to be like, oh, my chin looks weird in this one. Exactly. Can you? I don't know. Can you use another? And then the actor starts like trying to direct the movie with their ego.
Totally.
How do you not do that?
Which is a lot of people don't see the dailies and say, and they'll say, I mean, when we were doing No Country, you know, you're structuring, you're constructing a silent movie, at least from my point of view, from Llewellyn's point of view. He never talks. So how do you do that? How do you convey ideas without really using your mouth, using sound and all that kind of stuff? Or when you put a grunt, it actually means something, because I said when I opened the cachet and I see the money, I'd say, like, what about putting a grunt in here? And they would say, well, how would it sound? Well, how about, you're like, And they go, okay, do you have anything else? And I'd go through night. So I don't know if they're fucking with me, if they're bored, or if we're actually constructing.
I made him grunt for like an hour.
No, and then every time I see the movie, because we did use a grunt, they used a grunt, and every time we saw the movie together in a screening room or at Berlin or Cannes Film Festival or whatever, you'd hear the grunt, and I'd always know where Ethan was because you'd hear. So why would they play a joke on me, use it in the movie, and actually laugh in the audience? Was it personal? Was it for the movie? I don't know. To this day, I don't know.
Do you like playing existing characters? Like, do you like playing people who exist? Like the like playing Bush, working with Oliver Stone? Was that a strange?
Totally strange. And like fear. I was afraid. You know, when we were in Shreveport, Louisiana. You know, and I got arrested after that movie. So, like 4 hours after I finished. So, I already knew we were kind of being looked at.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, it being Oliver Stone, you know, you knew you were probably doing a farce of some sort.
Right.
On the Republican Party itself, you know, if not specifically Bush.
You got arrested for like a nothing and then.
No, it was stupid. It was really dumb. It usually is every time.
Kids.
But I think it usually is. But
I think I read a quote of yours where you said it was nice to be in jail knowing that I hadn't actually done anything wrong.
And it was
wrong.
Hell being in jail knowing I hadn't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, it was really dumb, and it was really not my fault. I didn't do it. What was my fault is I touched a policeman on the shoulder because I was trying to get his attention to tell him something, and that they don't like that. You can't touch police officers, and nobody ever should. No.
You wouldn't dare.
No, but anyway, so I knew that it was a volatile, at least my perception of the whole thing was a volatile situation, which it wasn't. It actually wasn't. People were very kind, and Republicans were very kind about it. But doing that kind of role is amazing because the guy, it hasn't been done. Like even, you know, the guy's still in office. He's still on his throne. You don't do a movie about somebody still on their throne. The guy who has, you know, went from one of the highest approval ratings to one of the lowest of all time. You know, and I'm playing him when he is at his lowest. And then, and when I was talking to Oliver about it, I had read a version of the script that was really, really not nice. And I said, there's no reason to do that because that's like watching CNN all day, every day.
Right.
You know, nobody likes him. Like, not even his own people like him.
But you have to like him because you're playing him. You have to believe in
him. No, you don't.
You don't?
No, you don't. No, absolutely not. You know, you're not going to like Manson. You know, you gotta, you know what I mean? It's like, but you look for aspect. Like, I'm more interested in finding out personally who this guy is. And then you do start to like him. I mean, he's a likable guy. The guy was voted in twice. I don't care how many votes of this or that. The guy was actually voted in twice. The fact that more than two people voted for him is amazing. And why? Because there's something really like down home, cool, likable about him. You know, boots on the.
Yeah.
I don't care Republican, Democrat, any of that shit. It's like he's a likable guy. Why is this all working for Trump? Because there's something that differentiates him from everybody else. It's not real.
Well, you know, I think with that, you know, and again, I don't want to.
Beat a dead horse.
Well, no, it's just what's fascinating to me is seeing Trump and Sanders are both doing a very similar thing to their own group.
Party.
To their own supporters, which totally. Is. And they're both doing something that no one else tends to do, which is they kind of just say what they really think.
That's it.
And even though Trump says batshit stuff, it's like, well, yeah, but I think what people got from him was
I think they're confusing authenticity with his ability to do a good job.
Yeah.
You know? And Sanders, he's not swayed by anything, and he just says what he thinks. And I think that's what's resonating. That's what resonates with people on both sides.
There's a very simplistic thing about that that has nothing to do with the realities of the red tape that those guys have to go through in order to create any change whatsoever.
Yeah.
They're not talking about any of that. The other people admit it, which is wrong. Hillary and this, they're going, oh, my God, this is a process. And the society at large is going, we're sick of process.
Yeah.
We've been buying into process, and look at where we are. Look at where we're at. We want Superman. We want the actual cape. We want the guy the tights and has a bulge, and when the women want to fuck him and the guys want to be him. And then Donald Trump shows up and they're like, oh, whatever. Okay.
Make him
not what I was saying, but fine. At least you have a cape.
It's so just seeing so many people trying to go into, you know, like vying for office, like tap dancing as hard as they can. What do you need me to say?
Yeah.
What do you mean to say? Totally. What do you mean? I like that. Okay, I don't like that.
Totally.
Oh, I know I said that before, but now I say something different. It's like, you know.
His. I feel like his speeches are just like generated by an algorithm that looks at 50-year-old women's Facebook posts. And then spits that out.
Totally. Like, dude, I got to say, and this is a parallel, but it was like, I did this movie Labor Day with Jason Reitman, and I know why I did it. I called Kate. I always wanted to work with Kate. I was like, please do this movie. She's like, I can't do it now. I got this other movie. We waited a year for her. We did the movie. But for some reason, okay, so you have a guy who, by the way, escapes prison, right? Who, for something he says he didn't do, but he actually did. If you watch the movie properly, he actually did something really bad. He was in prison. He escapes prison. He kidnaps a woman who's lonely and her son.
Sure.
Fucks the shit out of the woman for 5 days and then goes back to prison. And every woman who sees the guy, meaning the fan who sees me walking down the street, goes, oh, my God, I loved you in that movie. It's an exact parallel.
I believe.
Wait a second. You loved the guy who committed murder and escaped and kidnapped and fucked the girl.
There was,
and they went back to
didn't
jail.
Make love.
They
were, maybe
they not making love.
No, they had the right music, so it felt like making love.
That's the key.
But it was really there was some serious fucking
costume.
Going on.
There was a Labor Day. They had the costumes from Labor Day at the ArcLight.
Did they really?
And me and my comedy writer buddy Craig Rowan decided to have our picture taken with the Labor Day costumes.
Such a random.
So we would like
stains on the legs or something.
A stranger to like take our picture with the Labor Day costumes.
Like people are watching Labor Day. Like I wonder what those clothes look like up close. I would love.
Underwear,
those.
I mean, soiled underwear.
You understand when you see like it's like a superhero movie, like oh wow,
yeah,
that's what...
super cool. Like I remember when they had when the first Iron Man came out, the Iron Man suit was there.
Totally,
when Dark Knight was there, the Tumbler was there, like super cool stuff. Just like,
but then the Labor Day clothes.
I walk into the fucking
Arc not line. Really the Iron Man
Labor
suit.
Day.
Sort of, you know Labor what? Day. For a certain female demographic, that was the Iron Man
suit. Right. You're absolutely right. And it could have been that I was there on a Wednesday afternoon. Maybe they took it out for the rest of the time. Wednesday afternoons, they wheel that back out.
These were the pants from Glengarry Glen Ross. Is that really what people took away from that movie? Really? When does Hail Caesar come out?
Tomorrow. No, tomorrow. Friday.
Comes out Friday. This is actually going up the day that it comes out.
Tomorrow's what, Thursday?
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah,
February 5th.
Oh, it actually comes out on the it's 5th, but it comes out Thursday night. So it's really the 4th.
Technically the fourth.
But they say it's the 5th. Yeah. It's supposed to be bigger than Star Wars, I've heard.
I think that's what I had how it's tracking.
It's finally going
to
overtake Avatar, right?
Yeah. Avatar, which hasn't Star Wars overtaken Avatar? It has not?
No, not worldwide.
What's worldwide on Avatar?
2.7.
Is it
Star
really?
Wars isn't going to make it.
Is it really?
Yeah,
Star Wars isn't going to make
right?
it.
Right?
Wow, 2.7.
What the fuck what were the we fuck? All thinking? I didn't pay for it. That's not my fucking money that went into that
movie. I can tell you
movie.
How I could have been involved in Avatar, but was not.
Oh, please.
I could have been involved.
Please?
I won't tell you that. No.
Oh, how can you tease?
No, but I could have. I mean, you can kind of sum it up yourself, but, you know, yeah.
And then Sigourney Weaver sweeped in.
Yeah, exactly.
But $2.7 billion. So where's Star Wars at right now?
Number two, it's like two. No, I think it's just crossed two internationally.
So it's crossed two. Man, I probably won't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They think it's going to putter out.
But when Hail Caesar comes out, which cost almost $700 million to make.
Yeah, which I think is a wise investment.
They say that the projection, the proper projection, is $4.2
billion. I can't wait. I mean, this is going to be...
I mean, Clooney's trailer alone was probably like $600 million of that, right?
We're not talking about Clooney.
Okay.
talking about him.
I hope you get some points on this Hail Caesar situation.
Talking about me and Scarlett. Yeah, it comes out soon. It's good. It's a lot of fun, man. It really is a lot of fun. I having been, you know, like I said, feral in the woods of North Carolina, and coming out and cleanly seeing this movie, it's fun.
It's fun. The truth is, I believe you when you say that, because I honestly, having talked to you for an hour and 6 minutes,
yeah,
I feel like if you didn't like something you worked on, you go, nah, I didn't really like it.
Oh, no,
didn't really have a good time.
Jonah Hex hated it.
Yeah.
You hated the experience of making it or the final product?
Both.
Okay.
The experience of making, though, that would have been a better movie based on what we did,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what ended up happening to it, which is going back and reshooting 66 pages in 12 days. And that being, you know, and listen, I understand as financiers, you're trying to save money, and it's all, it becomes a financial thing. But and not even as a, you know, there's a thing called revenge trading. If you lose on a stock and you keep playing that stock because you hate that you lost on that stock, that's revenge trading. And I'm disciplined enough and knowledgeable enough to know that you just don't do that. But with Jonah Hex, if I had $5 million, which is how I always saw that movie, and I remember when I was talking to Warner Brothers and Jeff Robinoff about doing that movie, High Plains Drifter is what I put on the TV. I said, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I would do that movie still. I would still that version of the movie if I ever actually had the balls to spend $5 million, which I don't.
Yeah.
I would do that movie because that would have been the movie that would have been successful for sure. And it didn't need to cost any more than $8 million, $10 million, $12
million. Yeah.
For sure.
What was the final budget? Do you remember?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot more than that.
Do you know
not a lot, but you know, mid budget.
I did read today, speaking of budgets, the Star Wars advertising budget
was
$250 million.
So for P&A, $250 million.
Yes.
I love this shit.
And the movie
I love talking about this shit.
Itself, budget was $200. So it cost more to advertise that movie.
For sure. It's $200 million at $250.
Yeah.
$450. They say worldwide you have to make double what you spent on both of those. So in order to break even, which is 450, that's 900. Yeah. You have to make 900 to break even. So they're doing fine.
They're going to be fine.
They're doing okay.
But it's also all the ancillary product stuff too. There's so much Star Wars
merchandising,
stuff.
Merchandising and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. You're a stock guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I traded for a long time. I still do once in a while, but I was fully trading for 3 years.
What'd you like about it?
Oh, I love everything about it. It's fun.
What did you like about it?
But didn't
well, I'm just curious because I know, you know, like there was a period of time where I thought, this seems really interesting. And then I started doing some research and everything was, if you are not fully committed,
totally
following every day.
You get fucked. Just like if you try to casually play DraftKings. You'll get fucked.
It's the best parallel, dude, I've ever heard. It's so true.
You have to be really, really, really committed.
Disciplined. Not committed. Disciplined. Disciplined. That's what it is. People go out there and they want to do it. They go like this and that. They heard that made 500%, and then I'm going to make 500%, and then they lose all their money. News, fake news. CNN is fake news.
Yeah.
Right? Briefing.com is real news. So by the time you hear the news in CNN and whatever, Bloomberg, it's already happened, so it's meaningless.
Yeah.
If you're really into trading. And then being able to see the matrix and stuff and be able to look what's a phony buy and what's a real buy. Because people put phony names, phony numbers up, and there's a way to do that.
Can we be best friends?
Yeah. I mean, then you learn, and then you have fun, you know. And the kids are like, "I gotta go to school," and I'll be like, "Right there."
I mean, everything that you do really kind of has this common. There's this common denominator of basically like seeking out and trying to eliminate as much bullshit as possible.
That and how what my capacities are. That's the goal. It's a purely narcissistic goal.
Do you think you have a correct assessment of your own capacities?
No, and that's what makes that's why I keep doing stuff. That's why acting is fun, because I don't particularly love it, because it's a torturous you know, ordeal sometimes. But you know, with new movies, that's why I don't want to do a series. I remember Taya Leone was like, we got to get off the set. I can't wait to do a series. She loved the idea of doing the same thing every day and what
structure
brings and structured and playing the same character. I don't. I love the idea of doing a new movie and researching that and getting into it. And then you do it and then you're done. And then you recoup and then you look at another one and decide which another. Yeah, I'm in a position, thank God, very gratefully, to be in a position to go which one next.
Yeah,
you know, and what does that mean? And like, it's all a guessing game. And like, how can I challenge myself? How can I challenge myself? That's it. Like I said, purely narcissistic.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, not narcissism in the clinical sense of the word. It's, I mean, maybe it might be. Maybe there's ego.
It's not arrogant,
right?
It is about me.
I mean, there's.
I'm curious about. I really am. I'm curious about. And this is Joel and Ethan, too, and I think it's one of the reasons why we get along so well is they truly are interested because of their own social ineptness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Of what makes the human condition and what makes people tick and why people react the way they do. You know, like Ethan's a great example. Ethan, we're out doing No Country for Old Men, and we're in the middle of a scene in the middle of the desert. And Roger's like changing a light or something. And he and I are kind of looking at the ground, shuffling our feet. And he goes, Ethan goes, ugh. And I go, what? And he goes, nobody's going to see this movie. And he walked away. And I was like, what the fuck, man? You can't just say that in the middle of the movie and walk away. You know, so everybody's asking us. It was like, and it's hard to tell that story because people are like, did you feel it on the set? Like, that's my favorite movie of all. Did you feel it? And I was like, and I'm thinking of Ethan going, oh, God, why do I suck so bad?
It was bound to happen sooner or later.
It was bound to happen sooner or later.
Sooner
this is
or later,
it for us.
The president of Hollywood taps you on the shoulder. He says, I'm sorry, you're not invited and you got to go home. And it's embarrassing in front of everybody. I mean, it's just the imposter syndrome. Everyone has it.
That's exactly right.
Everyone has it. But I think it's good. I think that's good because if you didn't have a little bit of that, you wouldn't try. You wouldn't strive. Like there's nothing wrong with fear. There's nothing wrong with stress. There's nothing wrong with self-doubt. Totally. It's people who can use that to their advantage.
And want that. And it's a motivator. I don't feel shame because of it. I don't go around and think I'm, you know, maybe I did when I was younger, but that was motivating too. When I saw Thrash and I thought that was the worst performance I'd ever seen and I have to go to New York because I have to figure this out. So that was motivating. It's just in my DNA to be, I like that stuff. I like stuff that motivates me and maybe a little, you know, that's why, you know, when you do movies that aren't, you know, movies, maybe they see them, maybe they don't and all that. You know, I've been hit enough, you know, and it's okay. I don't feel like nobody's going to knock me out. I know that for sure. I know that for sure. But I spent 20 years working. And I didn't have a hit. I had people come up to me and they're like, dude, I loved you and, you know, the Goonies or whatever. And they were like, so like, what do you do now? And you're like,
I'm curious how you answer that. How do you answer that question?
Well, you're like, I'm acting. I have kids. I got to put food on the table.
No, but what are you really doing?
But I haven't seen you. You're like, they're not doing movies people see anymore, right?
Oh, fine. I'm a partner at Chunk's firm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, haven't seen it, so that means I haven't done it.
And then you do a movie, like, you know, after 20-whatever years, and then you do a movie, No Country for Old Men, and Cohen said it. Cohen says, there was a New York Times article that I saw recently, and they said he's not doing anything differently. He's just doing movies that people are watching now. He's always done good work. That was very nice of them. That was like the greatest compliment. It was, I think, the only compliment I've ever gotten from them, but a really good one, a really good one.
But it is a lot of, you know, like that success was 20 years of preparation and consistency.
Sure.
And then sooner or later it just tipped.
Or maybe it's disciplining me to get to a place where I'm expecting it. I expect the punches. It's okay. It's okay now. You know, it's like some things work, some things. You just said it. You just said it about your show. You just let it go. Let it go a lot. I let it go. And even talk shows, man, I used to go on. I used to get so nervous. Oh, my God. I was like, what if I don't, what if I say the wrong thing? Or what if I don't sound, I mean, horribly, like debilitatingly nervous. And now I don't give a
shit.
Well, some of that's youth too.
And like not,
some of
I don't give a shit. I care, but I'm able to have a conversation now based on whatever the chemistry is.
Because you're wiser and you're more comfortable with who you were.
It's just I'm older. I'm like the only guy on the planet that's actually enjoying getting older.
What do you like about it?
Oh God, man, it's everything. Everything. Even my balls dropping, I enjoy.
You know what's funny about that? As what? I was a split second away.
I know,
from being
I saw
like,
it in your eyes. So I picked up on it, and I was like, you know what?
Seen him on tripping over your own balls.
I'm not going to
even say it.
Right.
And you were right there.
I was right there for you. I'm here for you, man.
We were That's connected, man.
We're here.
We're making love.
Now it's been an hour and like 16 minutes.
We're making
and I'm still
love.
Here for you.
We're making love.
We're not fucking. We're making love.
Now tell me about Thanos. I want to hear about Thanos.
Everybody's so amazed about that like whole thing. It's great.
I read a thing, and what I read is that you said like, yeah, I don't really know. Like I, you know, they're saying
no,
I do.
No, but I do know. I mean, I don't.
Interesting.
I don't know. I didn't know. How's that? I didn't know. The severity of the reaction, not to me, but to the fact that it's even happening.
Yeah.
The fact that he's going to be there and the fact that they're going to get to watch him for more than a minute.
Yeah.
Means so much to people. Like, and I just told a story earlier where I walked into a comic book shop that was on the corner of the street of the house that I rented when I was doing Sicario. And I went in there and guys fucking flipped. I mean, they had they peed. Like they flipped.
You're part of it now.
No, that's the thing. And I talked to Ruffalo about it. And you know, Mark, who plays Hulk. And I was like, what's this thing? Because there's a lot of great actors, you know, doing some great parts for Marvel. That's the smartest thing they ever did, you know. And Mark is so good. He's such a good actor. He's a better actor now than he's ever been. You look at him at Spotlight. He's unbelievable. He's incredible. And he's still playing the fucking Hulk. I mean, that's cool. Like, what's uncool? There's nothing uncool about it. It used to be that you sold out when you weren't doing great work.
Right.
And then you played, you know, Jonah Hex or something.
Who would do
that? But I get it. And that was my mentality, too, of why can't we embrace all these things? And it's happening. And whether you like Marvel or not, they're genius in making that happen. Because now you have better actors like, you know, even Spader, man, you know, coming and doing all these things.
Yeah.
And they're doing like, why not? Why does it have to be a schmaltzy thing? Why can't you get good people and then create good moments and just, you know. Anyway, I just ran out of steam.
No, I'm glad that you admitted
best
it.
Best way to end the podcast ever.
It's empty.
Dude, and I only have, yeah. It's time.
Tanks oh, my God. Oh, no. You only got through three bottles. I'm not going to make you get through four water notes.
No, don't. Good. We've pulled three off. I think that's good.
God damn it.
To listen all three.
This was great.
Those are all three right there.
Does his own Foley work.
I had a lot of, and I'm not just saying this. I didn't know because I asked Liz Mahoney, my wonderful sister / publicist, who I said, so what, you know, how long does this? And she's like an hour.
You're like,
I was
Jesus
like,
Christ, why would
oh,
anyone
fuck,
do
that's
that?
A long time.
Yeah.
Like, and it's...
Just goes right by.
No, it's not. It goes, this one went right by.
Nice! it's like a coffee chat. It's like, hey, I met you at a thing. Let's go grab coffee. We'll talk and get to know each other.
I've never met anybody for coffee and went and talked for an hour.
You
ever.
Not one time.
Ever. Not one time. So this will be the first.
Come meet us for water. You want to come meet us for some waters? Hail Caesar. It's open now. It's open now. But it just came out Friday, so it's open now, February 5th.
Yeah.
And it's good to see you, and please come back sometime.
We'd love to.
Check in.
I will.
Next time you got to promote one of those bullshit Marvel projects.
I know, exactly right.
Swing back into
like
the Nerdist.
One. No, that won't be the next one. But it will be close to the next one.
Yeah. But whenever, honestly, please.
Okay.
Come back.
Thanks.
You can be the new other member of the podcast.
I love it. It's a trio. I
and
like
then,
it.
You know, always maybe a bring a costume from Labor Day.
I've always wanted to see those up close. Did you
it was
wear
behind
pants
glass?
In that
I couldn't
movie?
Touch it,
dude. Oh. That was like perfect full circle right there. Bring the costume from Labor Day, and maybe some 59-year-old in heat woman that's following.
That's your homework for the
that's
next time.
That's my homework.
All right. That's your homework for the next time. I loved when he got out of jail and fucked that lady.
Literally, dude.
That was great.
And I don't want to take away from anybody, and I'm not even saying this to protect myself, but to you know, people, like, I was doing Hail Caesar, and I had another one. They were like, oh, my God. And I go, Labor Day? And they go, yes. So, you know, it all works, man.
All right. Hail Caesar and Labor Day available on VOD.
VOD. As long as it touches the libido. It's all good.
That matters. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.